So today is Saturday, November 22nd, 2014. My name is Gordon Mussel, and I am doing a face-to-face interview with Mr. Vernon Wright. This is file number one. This is for Voices Ahead of the Curve, and this will go to the University of Dubuque Archives. So if you're ready to start, I mean, I'd just like to get a little bit of background information on you and where you grew up and what it was like and where you came from.
Okay. I was born and raised here in Chicago on the west side. We were about at least 5 or 6 miles from where I was born. Actually, I stay in the same house now.
That you grew up in?
Yeah. I moved back to take care of my mother some years ago. And she passed away in 2008.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Yeah.
And my plan was to sell the house and finally leave the neighborhood, but then the economy went bad.
Mm-hmm.
And to sell it would be giving it away. But yeah, I grew up on the west side of Chicago. And as you see, very much a basketball player.
Yes.
Right. But mom's really, she was more academics than sports. Right. She was glad that I enjoyed basketball, but academics was first. So actually, in her house, once her children, I was the last of four. Once you reached high school, you had to go to summer school, whether you passed or failed, whatever, it didn't matter, right? So I had an opportunity. You ever heard of Project Upward Bound?
No, I haven't.
It's a project, it's a program, I think it still exists, to help underprivileged kids get prepared for college. So what they would do, 6 weeks out of the summer, we would live on a college campus. The program I was in, there was more than one. The program I was in was out of Northwestern in Evanston.
Mm-hmm.
So every summer, I stayed on the campus, and we would take classes. We would have to take classes. But after your senior year, between your senior year and your freshman year in college, you take college courses. So by the time I got to Dubuque, it was like I wasn't really a freshman.
Right, you had a little bit more experience
under your belt.
Right,
I wasn't going through what the rest of the freshmen were going through.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I had college credit. I lived on campus for 3 summers by then. Right, and not only that, of course, if you're on a college campus playing basketball, you play against college players.
Yeah.
Right. So I probably had an unfair advantage. I would say. By the time I arrived in Dubuque.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny because I wasn't recruited by Dubuque. Right? Every place that I was recruited from was either too far or too close. By me being the last child, I got all the chores. Right?
Yeah.
So I knew after my senior year, I was going away. I was going away. Right, but I didn't want to go so far that my mother couldn't come see me play.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because by then she had hooked on. Right, after seeing the newspaper articles and stuff. So in my freshman year, a senior got recruited from Dubuque. So that's when I first heard about it. In my senior year, by the time they gave us an English class or something, I believe it was. And you had to apply to at least 6 or 7 colleges, right? And Dubuque was I just threw Dubuque in there, right?
Just cause?
I just threw it in there. I had to come up with 6, right? And the seed had been planted, because I was actually, we were going to play I don't remember which high school it was, I was a freshman, right? And the coach walked up and gave this player, his name was Charlie Cross, gave him the letter from Dubuque. Right, and he was reading the letter right in front of me, right, and I was like, "Oh man, is that how that works?" So that was planted in my, you know. So I just threw Dubuque on there, right? So I applied to. You have to apply. You have to actually apply to all those schools on your list, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was accepted, and I got a letter from Coach Davidson then, right? So I did a visit, and it was during the summer actually. He was having all of his recruits, everybody that he had recruited, to come in because, I don't know if they still do it, they used to have a basketball camp every summer on campus
mm-hmm.
that Coach Davidson used to run, right? And all the recruits came in to play against his present players, the ones he had working in the camp, because he would offer everybody on the team an opportunity to make you some money during the summer, right? So I played against them guys, and then he started recruiting me very heavily, right? And that's how I ended up in Dubuque.
But it wasn't your first choice?
No, it wasn't.
What was your first choice?
I had an academic scholarship to go to the University of Illinois. In the 70s, America was feeling really guilty. So they was throwing opportunities, especially educational opportunities, at the underprivileged. Mm-hmm. Right? I had an academic scholarship to go to University of Illinois, an academic scholarship to go to Northern University. But a lack of confidence, and I later found out I was wrong. I didn't know if I could play at those places.
Oh.
Because none of them recruited me. Mm-hmm. Everybody that recruited me was about the size of Dubuque, was small colleges. As you see, I'm not that tall.
Right. Right. Right, for a basketball player, yeah. Right.
And usually, I'm glad you didn't say this, but usually when you say this, people will say, well, Nate Robinson, and you know, somebody like that, say, do you know he's like one out of a billion? Really?
Yeah.
Right. Those guys.
Going against the
Spud Webbs, yeah, that's like one, that's two out of like millions of guys my size that you never heard of, right? You know, so pretty much, that's how I ended up in Dubuque.
Mm-hmm. What did you mean by, you know, America's feeling guilty? Was that kind of...
It was civil rights era, you know, Martin Luther King, and they were trying to make make up.
Right, okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. So they was just throwing opportunities, you know. Going to school was you know, if you really wanted to go, you could go. You know, if you couldn't bounce a ball or something, you was gonna have to pay the loan back. But they was making it like you couldn't miss it. If you wanted to go here.
We'll give you the tools.
Yeah, yeah. Here's an avenue. You can go. You can go this way. You can go this way, right? And but I wanted to play ball. That was a part of me at that time. And they had just started letting freshmen play on varsity.
Oh, wow.
Right. And guess what happened? I made varsity as a freshman. Right.
And you got to start?
Started.
That's.
Oh. I started a total of 2 games, fractured my shin.
Oh no!
Now, imagine this. Semester ends like what? The first semester ends like the beginning of December. Or
yeah,
something
right
like
at the very beginning of December.
Okay. All the students go home. When they go home, I'm on the freshman team, killing them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, during that period, Coach Davidson brought a couple of freshmen back because the rest of the freshmen got off with the other students. Varsity has to come back because they're playing Christmas tournaments, holiday tournaments.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
No time off.
He brought no time off, like a week or something. So he brought a couple of freshmen back, right? During that period, I take the starting spot on varsity, point guard. I can't wait for the students to come back and hear, point guard, freshman, Vernon Wright, right? When the students get back, I'm on crutches. I started a total of, I think it was 3 games.
How'd that happen?
At first, they thought it was just a bruise and shin splints is what they called it.
Mm-hmm.
They called it shin splints, right? And shin swole up a little bit. And the doctors told them that, you know, you might as well let him play, right? After I had set out a couple of games, right? So they tried. I don't know how in the world you call yourself taping up shin splints anyway. It's not an ankle.
I don't know how you do
anyway,
that.
Davidson did the best he could, right? And I wanted to play. I wanted to play, right? Freshman. Yeah. You see what I'm saying? Freshman, right? So he tapes me up. Didn't work. Now, you know how if something is hurt on you, a cut at everything, anything, mm-hmm. cut, bruise, anything. You gonna always hit that
on everything.
You gonna always bump it. It seems like it becomes a magnet, right? So game starts. He doesn't start me, right? Puts me in the game, right? So I'm ready to go to work. Now, a guy, I'm trying to remember. He was bigger than me, right? Now, of course, when you're small, you have to be fast, right? So now, your mind only knows one way to play. You know, a lot of people, that's why when you see people as they get older, they get hurt. Because in your mind's eye, you know, you're doing those old moves from when you were the young guy.
And you can't do them, man.
Yeah. You know, in your mind's eye, your hand is up around the rim, right?
Mm-hmm.
In reality, you like this far off the ground. So in my mind's eye, you know, anybody his size, I'm finna leave him in the dust. I'm finna shake him up, right? So I go to do my thing and move, but I'm not as fast, right? Because the leg is bad.
Mm-hmm.
He cuts me off, and guess where our legs meet?
Oh, right on that spot.
Right. I mean, it was almost like it was a target there, and he just kicked it, right? So I dropped like a bag of rocks. Right?
Oh.
Right? So I get up, because, okay, it's just the shin splints, right? No big deal. I get up. I go to take a step and go right back down. The referee go, get him out of here, right? So Davidson takes me to the hospital. Shin splints, my year's over with.
Oh.
Year's over with. By the time the students get back, this is around Christmas now. By the time students get back in January, I'm on crutches. Now, you know, Dubuque is.
Hilly.
So that is not a good place to be on crutches. It really isn't.
If you're going to be walking around.
Right.
Yeah.
And then Cassett Hall is down, mm-hmm. and you have to go up, right? Unless they didn't change that, which I doubt.
No.
I didn't think so. So, yeah, it was a trip. But I got through it. And the rest of the 3 years went pretty good.
So you eventually you got back to starting.
But it wasn't you know what it wasn't.
The, Wait, was it?
It wasn't freshman.
Yeah.
At point guard, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, I started the rest of the 3 years there.
You so you go around and tell people you'd be like, yeah, I started as a freshman.
There's
so
no witnesses.
Yeah, there's no
witnesses. There's no witnesses, right? A young lady. I don't think I want you to write this down. My high school sweetheart. Right. When I went back to Dubuque, she insisted on going with me. I'm 19. Of course, I let her come with me.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Right. And she stayed. She was there for the first couple of games, and then she had to go home. So she missed a game when she left right before I got hurt. And I always told her that was her fault. that was your fault. I was doing fine while you stayed up there with me.
And then look what happens.
You see what happened? But yeah, the rest of the time, the rest of my 4 years was, as far as basketball was, it was fun. It really was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from I went from an environment that was 90% black to an environment that was pretty much 98% white. Right. So this is a learning experience.
Mm-hmm. What was that? What was that first initial, like, you come to campus? I know you said you did it the summer school stuff, but what was it mm-hmm. like that first initial, like, you get to campus and the difference that you see?
Evanston, where Northwestern is, Evanston is pretty mixed, so it wasn't a real culture shock, but the Caucasians in Evanston were used to being around black people. The Caucasians in Dubuque wasn't. Anyway. And I believe that we're all, I don't want to say racism, but we all favor our own kind.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And it wasn't the kind of racism that we're hunting people down and lynching them. It was racism, and not just, it was on both sides. It wasn't just, you know, I don't want you to think, I'm not saying that it was just Caucasians being racist. Blacks was racist too that was up there.
Because
mm-hmm. when I was there, there was like 90, I think there was like between 80 or 90 of us. Between the University of Dubuque, Loras, and Clark. And at that time, Clark was all girls.
Right. Yeah.
They were all girls, right. And the race, if you can call it that, it was from lack of knowledge that, you know, you didn't know certain things that you don't say to these people each way.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And I think that's the first thing that I noticed, that these people aren't used to being around black people. And most of the black people that was there didn't have that Upward Bound experience. That, although there were some, like the guy I played God with actually was raised in Iowa.
Really?
Right. And it was a lot of our tendencies and ways, and I always thought that was funny, and I think that was wrong. We should tease him about that. Where he was actually, could be called a white man in a black man's body. Because he went to school with all, in his yearbook, he was the only black person there. And he had been in, his father got hired by John Deere. His name was Tim Jackson. Maybe he's on your list. But his father got hired by John Deere or somebody when he was like 3 or something. So from 3 on, he was raised in Iowa. Right. Not the only black people he came in contact with was the ones in his family. Right.
Yeah.
Right. And it was funny. He had rhythm like the rest of us. He could really play ball.
Mm-hmm.
But he was... all his ways and tendencies of a Caucasian person. You know, he tried hard to fit in with us, right? But things that just came natural to us.
You could just tell.
You could just tell. You know, it's just like, I was in Jamaica once, right, with my wife. We're staying in a resort. It was in the Grill. Across the road, and like maybe a half a city block, there was an open market. Right,
mm-hmm.
So I'm gonna go over there and get some souvenirs. Now, if I don't talk, I look just like Jamaicans, don't I? If you don't hear me talk,
right?
Do you know? As soon as I walked off that resort, I almost caused a traffic accident. People started pulling over. They was trying to sell me weed and everything. I'm like, how do they know that I'm not talking? They can't hear me talk, but I'm telling you, they was pulling over and everything. Cars was something. Hey, my brother, come here, come here. And I'm walking. There was a lot of people walking. I'm the only one they were singling out. To this day, I don't know how they knew.
Is the way you walked, or the
I have
way
no you... idea. As far as I can tell, I was walking like them people. I look like them, all because all Jamaicans don't have dreads.
Right.
Some of them have haircuts like yours, like mine. They knew, but my point was, it was just like Tim. After being, you could just tell he was not from where we was from. People just know.
Do you think that made it a little easier for him to fit in on campus then, with crossing the boundaries?
I think he did all right, but there was it seemed like he was struggling a lot.
He's like, I don't fit in here, I don't fit in
right
here.
Exactly. You mm-hmm. know, nobody, you know, showing him anything. But right, like you just said, it's like, I don't really fit in with these guys, I'm too dark, but I don't really know these guys, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they're always laughing at me because, well, you know how we can be. Right? And I think that would be what the racism that I, racism, because there were some incidents, and it usually stemmed from people just not knowing.
Yeah.
You know, not that I hate you so much, you know, that I want to lynch you or anything, or I want to cut your throat or anything. Somebody would say something or do something that, okay, you don't really supposed to say that to those people. One of the things, it was a term at first, I didn't know why folks got upset, but they would have a habit of saying, you people.
Yeah.
That did not go over well.
Yeah.
It got to the point when I would hear, I'd go, oh, okay, here we go again. But really, that's really not a bad, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's, you know, you're not me, you're not us. You know, he's just speaking about a particular group. But that was just one of those things that just did not go over well at all.
Do you have any, like, actual altercations, like, that came up from...
Yeah.
Yeah? So was that a pretty common thing on campus?
No.
Or
no. It wasn't a lot of... I'd say maybe one or two a year. And then it wasn't... I think there was only a couple on campus. It was usually in town when somebody had left the campus.
So the city of Dubuque was a lot different than
yes.
the campus.
And some genius... came up with the idea to let they lowered the drinking age to 18 in Illinois. But of course, East Dubuque is in Illinois, which is right over the river.
Yep.
Right? And that had a lot to do with it. Because students, there was always somebody headed to
across the river.
Right. And I don't know how security. Now, security was sort of strong in the women's dorm. There was no security in the men's dorm. We was pretty much allowed to do whatever we wanted to do. A young lady could stay with you as long as you wanted her to stay. Nobody would put her out.
Come through or say anything.
Come through or say anything. As long as you weren't hurting anybody. As long as you weren't putting your hand on anybody or just getting crazy. Mm-hmm. One morning, I went to the shower room, and this guy, he was from Iowa, Caucasian. He had went home and got the pig. He got drunk the night before, mm-hmm. and he went home and got the pig, and they found him in the pig in the shower.
In the door.
Not doing nothing, in the
right,
door.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he was doing anything perversion, but just, they kicked him out. But I'm just saying, that was from that lowering the age to 18 to drink.
Yeah, people do crazy stuff.
Right. And they came to their senses and they changed that. But this was in my freshman year. A black student was being expelled. And the Black Student Union took over the administration building. Right. And as I remember, there's a picture of me, it was in the newspaper, in a cast, right, sitting on the steps. It didn't last long. They didn't have to get the police or anything. And we just held it for a couple of hours.
And because the student was getting expelled?
He was getting expelled. It was his fault. Actually, he deserved to be expelled. But for the rest of us, it was just an excuse to do something.
Right.
Because most of us was like I was from Chicago. So Chicago, and then you go to Dubuque, things get way too slow for you. You know, and that was one of the appealing things, it's funny, about Dubuque, is because I knew that there was just too much distraction here in Chicago. And I probably wouldn't finish if I stayed here.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And Dubuque wasn't that much happening. The casino wasn't there yet.
No, yeah.
So it wasn't a lot happened. But yeah, after a while, you know, you get sort of, you know.
Oh, restless.
You know what I'm saying? Y'all ever do anything around here? So when he got in trouble, it was just, you know, all that pent up frustrations, or if you want to call it that. A chance to just do something.
Right? Yeah. Was that fairly typical? Was that
That was one time. What we eventually, that was my freshman year. What we eventually started doing was like Platteville, University of Wisconsin, Platteville. We started going up there and partying. They partied a lot. They had like 300 or 400 black people. Right. Don't write this down either. Matter of fact, I had a couple of girlfriends up there. Mm-hmm. Right. So we started going up there and partying a lot with them, and that sort of helped.
So how many black people were on UD at the time when you were there?
I'm thinking, if you don't count Loris and Clark, because the majority was at U of D, I would say about 60, close to 60, I think. You got to remember, this is a long time ago. This is a very long time ago. But I'm thinking it was about at least 60 or 70 of them just on the university's campus. Because really, Loris and Clark really didn't have that many. Mm-hmm. You know, they would flock over there with us every opportunity they could get.
Was faculty and staff, were they still, the majority of them, white?
Yeah. Let me see. One coach, there was a black coach at U of D. I think he was the only one, and I'm not sure about Clark, but although we could take, you could, I don't know if you can still do this, you could take classes at Clark and you could take classes at Lawrence back then.
Really?
They used to let you do that. They had a bus that would go around, but I never did. So I really, the only time I really went to Lawrence is when we played them. Mm-hmm. Right. But I'm not sure how many was in that faculty. But I remember one black coach, Rick Solomon, who eventually moved on and coached in the NFL as an assistant. He's with the Vikings for quite a while. I don't know if he's what he's doing now. But I think he's the only one I can remember. Yep. There was an African American teaching at the seminary. Is the seminary still there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was an African American teaching there. They anybody, and this was for African Americans, as I remember it. If you got a B or better in any religious course, they gave us a chance 1 year to go to a seminary and take a class. It was about the black church, I guess that's why they included us. But it was every night for 2 weeks, and it was for like 2 credits, I think. 2 credit hours.
Yeah.
That's hard to beat.
Yeah.
Right? So it wasn't that I was trying to get close to God. Right? 2 credit in 2 weeks, right? So that's how, and he was teaching the class. That's how I knew about it. He was actually teaching the class. I don't remember his name. But other than those two, them the only two professors or teachers that I can remember. It was African American.
Did any of the other instructors have any issues with race, like while you were there? Never. Not with students or anything like that.
No. It was pretty much the same with all of them. Come to class, and I'll teach you. Right? It seemed like, you know how in high school, everybody, you know, if you don't go, we're going to tell on you and all that.
Mm-hmm.
If your bill is paid, okay, come to class, don't come to class, that's on you. But if you come, I'm going to teach you.
Yeah.
But they didn't, I don't remember any of them, you know, singling anybody out or anything, or any students ever accusing them of doing that. As I remember it, the people who struggled was the ones who... See, the 70s was totally different. You know, it was a partying generation,
right? Yeah.
So to speak. And the people who had problems in college was the ones that couldn't handle the freedom. Okay, because here's an 18-year-old who's been under his parents' supervision his entire life. Right, pretty much told to do and when to do and how to do. All of a sudden, all the restrictions are gone. Right?
Yeah.
So you're like a kid that's been looking through the window. Now all of a sudden you're on the other side of the window. No supervision.
And you don't know what to do with yourself.
And it's just too much. It was just for some of them, it was just too much. I don't know if it's still like this, but back then the party never ended. It might change locations.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have to make yourself, you know, do what you came there for. You came here to get an education, right? And then just find what, you know, then go back to the party.
Yeah.
But a lot of them just couldn't lead a party.
Yeah. Did you ever have any problems?
Who, me?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, I was good at it. I was by then. Because like I said, I had been in college a lot, so I knew about that,
mm-hmm.
right? And plus, I was a basketball junkie, right? No grades, you don't play.
Right, yeah.
It's as simple as that. So yeah, I had to play. Mm-hmm. Right, I had to play.
And you said your mother pushed you pretty hard academically.
Yeah,
too,
yeah. So by the time I got to college, it was like habit. It was, you know, by then, it wasn't no big, you know, it mm-hmm. wasn't no struggle.
And you said you had to do summer school. Was that a requirement of your high school? Was that your mother?
No, that was my mother. And her sons, you had to go to summer school.
How many brothers did you have?
I had 3 older brothers. And the same for all of us. When you get to high school, you're going to summer school. I don't care if you didn't fail. So since I had to go to summer school anyway, Project Upward Bound was like next level summer school. Because they went to concerts. You stayed on a college campus, right?
Wow.
I mean, you lived there.
Yeah.
Right? And Evanston sits on Lake Michigan, the University of Northwestern.
Yeah.
Beautiful campus. So since I had to go anyway, right, plus, I don't know if they still do it, they used to give the students a stipend, $30 a month. Now, in 1972, to a kid with no bills, $30 was a lot of money. Right? When you consider, you could take a dollar, you could take a quarter. A can pop was like 12 cents in most places. That bag of potato chips that's in these machines now for like 75, it's like a nickel, and it was bigger than that. So what's that, 17 cents?
Yeah.
They had penny candy.
Wow.
Right. They even had some candy was 2 for a penny. So with that remaining 8 cents, you could do candy and cookies, because they had penny cookies too. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So $30 was a lot of money. The top gym shoe was Converse All-Star. $15.
Wow. For a pair of Converse.
For a pair of Converse. $15. Funny thing, and this is part of when I first realized that I was a hooper, right? I go to my mother, right? Because at this point, regular gym shoes were like $4-$5. Like PF Flyers, stuff like that was the name, right? Tell mom that, mom, I'm a basketball player. Hooper. Hoopers wear Converse All-Stars. Yeah, baby. And, well, they cost $15. Boy, are you crazy? Buying no $15. So mom said, you know what? You know, she let me work it off. Now, fast forward to last year. I got a granddaughter. She plays for Glenbar East. She calls me up. She said, Granddad, I made the freshman team. I'm like, yeah? She said, yeah. She said, but I need some gym shoes. You do? And Kevin Durant's or something. It costs $135. I went, are you crazy, girl? And then I had a flashback. I'm like, wait a minute. Wait. I said, you know what? The money's on the way. I'm going to put a little extra money in there, get you some ankle braces and knee braces. Don't play without them. But yeah, I had a flashback. Are you nuts? But it's changed. So $30 back then was a lot of money.
Yeah.
It was a lot of money, right? So yeah. So since I had to go to summer school, I went to, and I had opportunity to go to Project Upward Bound. I jumped in there.
And who put on Project Upward Bound? Was it like a...
I think it was funded by the state.
Okay.
Actually, there's one of the sisters at my church. She works for Project Upward Bound. And I was shocked when she told me that it is still in existence. But I think the state funds it.
Really?
I think it does. It's either the state or the individual colleges. Let me see. When I was in high school, Northwestern had a program. North Central, which is like around Naperville, Illinois. Loyola had a program. And there was one other. There was a fourth one. Because we would actually play each other in basketball or softball like that. But I think it's the state. It's either the state or the school itself.
Mm-hmm. But not all the schools participated.
No. No, not all schools had them.
Okay. Was there a lot of students that took, were a part of it?
Yeah. There was a couple hundred and with us. I don't know about the other program. But let me see. There was like 5 or 6 different high schools represented. At least. So yeah, there was a couple of hundred of us. I remember we would go places. They would need 2 buses almost.
Wow. Would you have to have some sort of like academic like... standing to be able to qualify for it, or was it just
just any student? You had to be, you know, putting, you know, B average, something like that.
Okay.
And you had to be underprivileged. if your parents, as a matter of fact, don't put this in there either. You almost had to be dirt poor. So most of us had to lie a little bit.
Right.
You had to almost, your parents had to almost be making nothing to get in, mm-hmm. you know, besides your grades. So we kind of stretched the truth a little bit.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. So did you, when you got to UD, did they offer you any scholarships or anything like that?
When I was 10, my father passed away. He worked on the railroad, right? So my mother was getting benefit checks. And at 18, because I was going to college, the checks started coming to me. Right, and Coach Davidson got me some student loans, and he did what he could, but I was covered. Mm-hmm. I was covered because, like I said, he didn't recruit me. So by the time he got to me, he had spent his budget.
Yeah,
right. By the time he found out about me, and then the next year he put something on there. Yeah, but you know, tuition wasn't nowhere near like what it is now. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it wasn't. A few thousand dollars, I remember it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I wanted to ask, what was how much was gas then, at that time? Can you remember?
It wasn't even a buck a gallon.
Yeah.
Yeah, like $5 with pretty much half a tank almost.
Wow. Man.
Yeah, I know.
So what did your mother do then? I can't remember if she said this already.
My mother was a nurse.
Your mother was a nurse.
Yeah, she was a nurse for 35 years.
Right. And what did your brothers go on to do?
Two of them went to the service, and the other one was a street hustler. Yeah, he was just the flash and dash of the streets. caught him young, and he was just hook, line, and sinker. Mm-hmm. Right. The two that, as a matter of fact, the two that went on to the service, they end up, all three of us end up working for the same company. They retired as bus drivers. I worked in computer operations for 26 years and retired.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Was there a lot of, growing up here, was there a lot of, you know, kind of, like with your brother, like getting him early? Was that kind of... Is there a big problem like that in Chicago?
Yeah.
With a lot of kids?
Yeah. You know, and this problem still exists. Growing up in the hood, right, in low-income areas, the only time you see people that look like you, there's lawyers and doctors and stuff like that, is on TV. Right, and that's not really real.
Yeah,
you know, you just see them on TV, right? What you do see, you see people who look like you going on to be professional athletes, professional entertainers, right? And then you see the street life.
Yeah,
you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And the professional athletes you see and the professional entertainers you see. And you get to, you know, because people come back and you see very few, but you see a lot. You see a lot of the street life, right? And you get to be 18. By then, you might have an offspring already that you need to feed.
Yeah.
Right? So, now... How do I feed this offspring, you know? Or even if I have an offspring and I don't take care of it, how do I take care of myself?
Right?
I don't have
else.
Money to go to college. You see?
Mm-hmm.
Right, so what are my options? Right, now, there are a lot of jobs. If you know something, you know, there's not a lot of jobs now for just manual labor.
Yeah.
Right.
You have to have skills.
You have to have skills. Now I'm competing against people from other countries, right, who these jobs, what they offer me, I think is pennies. To them, it's a raise, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. So they're going to work harder and longer. Mm-hmm. Right. So what are my options?
Yeah.
You see, you got to eat. My mother used to have a saying about a person, and she said, of any color, if, you know, one way or another, you're going to do what you have to do. Right. So if I can't find a job and all that, then I'm going to probably do something illegal.
Yeah.
But a person, I got to eat. Right? I need a roof over my head. Right? I want things. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, in the low-income areas, that happens way too much. And then another thing is people young, they gravitate to gangs because the gangs start being their family.
Yeah.
You know, they become... one of the things I found out that the majority of us, we are a direct product of our environment. Mm-hmm. So if this is the environment that I grew up in, then my life is probably going to reflect that.
But you were instilled with something different to get out.
Moms, and this doesn't happen, I always wish that when I was growing up, my mother was known as the meanest woman on the block. Right. I remember I had some friends who were just, they could go home and say, "Mama, I don't feel like going to school." Okay. Now, me, one day I'm playing softball and I slide into second base, sprain my ankle. I make it home, get to mom's. Mom said, "Okay." Mom's a nurse. She said, "Okay, we got to go get it x-rayed." And I started laughing. She said, "What is funny?" I go, "Well, I'm hurt, but at least I ain't got to go to school." Mom said, "Why do you say that?" "Mom, I can't walk." Mom said, "You got to go to school." True to her word, that lady took me to school the next day. They x-rayed and it was just sprained. She took me to school and left me. Right? I hop to the teacher and tell her, you know, "This woman crazy. I can't walk." They call her up and tell her that, you know, "Come get this boy. Mom's coming get me. Told me to go lay down." You know what the lesson was? Life don't take excuses. That's right. Why she made me go. Mm-hmm. She said, just because you get hurt, you're going to still have to feed your family. Life don't take excuses. Right? So with her, education it wasn't an option. Education and church and family was not an option, right? If I'm feeding you and taking care of you, you got to do these things. This is your job, right? Unfortunately, everybody's parents wasn't like that. And as a matter of fact, I shared that opinion of everybody about her being the meanest person. But after I got grown, right, I could never thank her enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could never think. Because that's the way out. That's your way right there. Right? Because true power in this country is to who? It's the people with the knowledge, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's where it is. You can pretty much do what you want to do with knowledge. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, in the poor areas, that doesn't get to a lot of households. And a lot of reason is, there's a saying that used to go that... welfare was handed down
through family.
Yeah, people on welfare, their kids are probably going to be on welfare. Not that they had to be, but because that's what your product of it. You know, you seen that's what mom did.
So that's what you were going
to
do.
So moms have, and it used to be you can't do this now, but the more kids you get, the bigger your check was. Right. So my parents did it. You know, so that the best teacher is the person you live with, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And not so much what they say, what they do. My parents worked, and they stressed education was was paramount. Yeah, you got to go.
But there's a lot of other people around you that didn't have the same attitude.
No. Well, one of the things I noticed when I got to Dubuque was the athletics, the track team, and the people that was on the baseball team. I'm not 100 guys that's better than all these folks, right? Never made it to college. Never heard of
it. Right.
Right. It was education, because, you know, in high school, a lot of high schools, you can sort of, you know, because it's not education is not as in high school.
You know, it's pushed, yeah.
It's pushed, you know, it's not as, you know. But to college, you know, if it's not in you, you're probably not going to pick it up there. Yeah, if it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If it's not already in you. You know, and a lot of it would be like, you'd probably be intimidated. Because these are highly educated. Now, you know, you go from just, I'm just sitting in a room with 20, 30 people where I can hide.
And get moved along, and that's
and
it.
And just, you know, do a minimum amount of work and get moved along. Well, in college, it's really less of a place, especially a place like Dubuque. It's not that big, so where you going to hide?
Yeah.
I remember sitting in some classes where I was the only black person sitting in there, right? But it didn't intimidate me because I'd been, you know, all alone. Mm-hmm. I'd been in college classes. I'd been sitting in this environment, right? And I noticed the ones that succeeded was the ones who had been pushed to education all along. You know, I'm not saying it's impossible, but I don't think you can just walk into that environment and say, okay, now I'm going to start here. Wouldn't that almost be like starting your children instead of going from kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade? You're just going to start them at fourth grade.
And then say good luck?
See, right, good luck. You know, and everybody else is miles ahead of them.
Yeah.
You see? But yeah, I remember that there were so many athletes. And I even tried to talk to some, but they was on something else back then.
Did you see any of that? Do you see any kids that just couldn't make it when they were actually there at UD?
At UD? Not. I don't remember anyone who was there who just said, "I can't do the work." The ones that didn't make it. It was more so that they just couldn't handle the freedom. Mm. As I remember, college is mainly how much you put in it.
Yeah.
You can be an A student if you're willing to do the A work. You know, but if you want to just get by and be a C student, you can do that. Mm. But it's mainly jumping in there, right?
Yeah.
And I remember some students had to go talk to their professors, you know, some little personal time or counselor, sort of, you know, like that. But I don't remember anybody just flunking out because they couldn't do the work.
Yeah.
And I remember you getting to the point where you can identify that who wasn't going to be back next season, next semester. Okay, this guy's at all the parties. You know, we won't see him next semester.
Right.
And usually you didn't.
Yeah, lost in something else.
Too much freedom. Just too much freedom. Right. And like I said, the men's dorm was 24 hours visitation.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And there was no AIDS and HIV. And it was the 70s.
Yeah.
It was the 70s, right?
Different time.
So members of the opposite sex just stay in your room forever. Right, and it was just too much freedom for some people.
Was there a lot of security on campus at all then, or was it?
There was security. Yeah. If you put your hands on somebody, you would see them.
Okay.
Right, but you know, long as you didn't harm nobody else and yourself, you know, a danger to nobody, they pretty much left you alone.
Were the dorms? Was there any sort of segregation in the dorms, or would you have white roommates or?
Some did, yeah. A few of them, quite a few of them had white roommates. But no, there was no segregation at all. They used, and I don't know if they ever started this back, but for extra, for like $100, you could have a private room. No roommate. So for my for half of my freshman year, sophomore year, and junior year, I had the single room. No roommate.
Wow.
And then sophomore, junior year, right. Then my senior year, they cut it out. I remember, I think it was Smith Hall, the one on campus, mm-hmm. up on the hill. And standing there, and I had a roommate. He was a black guy. But yeah, there was quite a few black and white people rooming together.
What dorms were there when you were there? Do you remember?
Is it Smith, Cassett? The women's state, was it Atkinson? There was a girls' dorm. It was right across from. No, it was right by where the lunchroom used to be.
So, but Pierce Commons was right there, and then there's Severance.
Okay, Severance. There's Severance. I think that's what I'm trying to think of. I think Severance was a girls' dorm.
And then across the street is Van Vliet.
That wasn't there.
That wasn't there.
That wasn't there. Smith was like between the library and the gym.
Okay.
Cassett Hall was down that hill, but it was another dorm that looked exactly like it. What's the name of that?
I can't remember.
But it's still there, isn't it? It was two dormitories over there.
Mm-hmm.
Cassett Hall, and then there was another one.
Yeah.
I can't think of the name of it.
I don't know.
And it looked exactly alike, pretty mm-hmm. much.
Yeah, see, I'm a commuter, so like,
oh, okay. Yeah, it was another one over there, and I think that was it. Yeah, I think Stevenson. I think that's the name I was looking for. That the girl stayed in.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and it was all kind of security and. They had curfew and all of that. But, I mean, you simply was like, okay, you come stay with me. You know?
Didn't make any difference. Yeah,
come stay with me. You know?
Now, what were you were talking about the Soul Butler house, you're saying?
We named it. It was Soul Butler. I don't think it was Institute. But anyway, we renamed it to the Black Presidium. That was the unofficial name. And it was just a place for us to socialize here.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it was.
You remember where that was?
It was right on the corner. It was right behind Stevenson. I can't think of the street. You know where the Walgreens is? When you come up that hill,
yeah, yep.
From Walgreens? It was at the top of that hill.
Okay.
It's right at the top of that hill.
Okay.
On the corner. When you got to the very top, that's where it was.
Mm-hmm.
On the corner.
But
where the hospital is and Walgreens,
yeah,
and all that,
right,
you had
there.
To come up that hill. Right, it was right there on mm-hmm. the corner.
Okay.
It was a regular house. It was a regular house. As mm-hmm. a matter of fact, every year two students lived there. Yeah.
Wow. And you remember it was specifically, it had Soul Butler in the name.
Soul Butler was the official name of it.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, Soul Butler was the official name of it. The mm-hmm. Soul Butler something.
Mm-hmm. And I had interviewed a gentleman earlier that he was there in the late 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that there used to be an area below Peter's Commons that the majority of the black students used to go to hang out at.
Student Union? Okay, that was before me.
He said it was, yeah, he said it was just...
It was outside or inside?
It was inside. And inside. It was underneath the cafeteria.
Okay.
In Peter's Commons. But
there was a student union there.
Oh, okay.
That's what was there. But not just black students. That might have been before they got to Saul Butler place.
That could be, yeah.
But as I remember, that was the student union. And black and white students hung out there. Mm-hmm. Pool room was in there, you know, games. There was a little cafeteria there. But yeah, black and white students hung out there.
Wow.
But like, I didn't get there to 72, so.
Right, yeah. I just didn't know if that was something that had carried on or not.
As I remember what you're describing, that was the student union for everybody.
Okay.
Right under the cafeteria.
Wow. So, on the basketball team?
Yeah.
Was there, how many other African Americans were there on the team?
Okay, my first year, there was two on varsity before I made it and got hurt. And there was like six of us on the freshman team, two left in the middle of the semester. Then I got moved up to varsity, so there was like three. Then the second year, it was packed. it was black with African Americans. And let me see, the third year, there were only like three on the freshman team, and I think it was just three on the varsity. And then my last year, I was the only one.
Really?
Really.
How did that happen?
Good question. I was the only one on varsity. I take that back.
Okay.
There were two on the freshman team. Yeah, but I was the only one on varsity.
Did the numbers of African American students fluctuate a lot over the time you were there?
Mm-mm. No. Just the basketball players did.
Wow. Did they still have when you were there, did they still have the pool?
The swimming pool?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They did?
I still swim for exercise. As a matter of fact, when you get my age, you might want to lean to swimming.
Start swimming? Yeah. Wow. Wow, man. So we're doing a special for the McCormick Gym.
Okay.
And
didn't they change the name?
No,
they didn't.
It's still McCormick,
okay,
right there.
I thought they named it after Davidson.
And we're going around getting everybody's favorite memories of what they had of anything that could have happened in
McCormick Gym.
In McCormick Gym, whether it was on the court or whether it was this or that, it doesn't matter. What's your most favorite memory?
My most,
or it could be a terrible memory. Whatever you would like to.
Oh man, I had some nights in that gym, bro, that you would not believe. You want me to describe it?
Well, yeah, we're looking for a story.
Oh man, one night we was playing Iowa Wesleyan at home. You familiar with basketball terms?
Mm-hmm.
You know what in the zone is?
Yeah.
Okay, and when I was playing, you used to call it getting hot. We was playing Iowa Wesleyan. I went 17 for 22.
Wow.
Great. I finished with 36 points.
Killing it.
It was almost like I was hearing music and nobody else could hear it. And I was dancing to the music and everybody else was off beat. That nobody could just get on, could catch up with me. And it was like I just couldn't miss. Right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a night, well, this wasn't in McCormick, we was playing Loras. And they always billed it as a city championship. And we lost, but I had 32.
Wow.
Right. But as far as McCormick Gym, I had other good nights, but that would have been probably the pinnacle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, on the other side of the spectrum, when I first got on campus, I remember Coach Davidson taking me to the gym and giving me the mop. No. This was the basketball camp. I take that back. This was between my freshman year and sophomore year. And he asked me if I wanted to work in the basketball camp. Right. And mm-hmm. So I came back. I came back during the summer. And the first thing he did was gave me this big old dust mop, right? And I was like, okay, I done made a mistake. This is not what I thought. Right. But I never had to do it again. I think he was just making a point or just messing with me. So I think that's probably the worst memory. Well, next to fracturing my shin.
Oh, yeah, of course, that too.
Yeah, I take that back. I would say fracturing my shin was the worst memory I had in McCormick's gym.
And what was your major?
Business administration.
Business administration. And you went on to use that?
I worked in computer operations. So, but it was you needed a college degree.
Right.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I worked in computer operations for 26 years. And for the Chicago Transit Authority, they've changed it now. But back then, with 25 years of service, regardless of your age, you could retire with full benefits. And at the time, I was taking care of my mother, mm-hmm. right? And mom was totally dependent. She couldn't do anything by herself, right? And I had promised her that as long as I was able, that she would not go to a nursing home. Thank God my wife jumped in there with me, because it was not. But anyway, mom was fading. She was fading. And I realized that I was at that point where I could retire, because I was paying. My mom, my wife worked also.
Mm-hmm.
So we was like tag teaming it, right?
Yeah.
So we was paying people to help, right? So I realized that I can just retire, right, and take care of my mother myself,
mm-hmm.
right? And I figured out what my pension would be, and it was pretty much what my take-home pay was, almost. Right. Plus, I could get the chance to spend this last time with my mother.
Yeah.
And mom's, after I retired in the end of 2003, December 31st, and mom's passed in 2008.
Okay. So, what did you go on to do after you retired?
At first, I worked for the church. And things went a little south there. Let's just say that they stopped following God.
Mm.
Right? And it was, I don't mean this literally, but it was like I was given a choice. Keep your job and follow man. Do what's right and we're going to fire you. So I got fired. Right. Go with our program. Go with our program, which was wrong, what mm-hmm. they was doing. Don't follow us and you get fired. So I got fired. And I ended up working for this company called Airport Express. I call it my retirement hustle. And I drive people around. Because I really, after being inside for all those years, I really...
Right, the computer stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I really don't want to be... What the Transit Authority used to do, they would... I spent most of those years in a sub-basement. Well, security. It's got to be secure.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. If you ever watch... You ever watch the Chicago Bulls?
Mm-hmm.
You see them guys at halftime?
Mm-hmm.
Used to be Norm Vanley, now it's... Who was that? It used to be Kendall Gill. I don't know who they got now. Will Perdue. Is it Will Perdue?
Yeah.
Right. They're in this, they're at the Merchandise Mart Apparel Center, which is right along the Chicago River, in the basement. The computer center is under there, so we're like a sub-basement. Right. So I really don't want to go inside no more.
Yeah.
So this is, I'm outside in the street, nobody hassling me.
I like to see the sun.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, so that's what I'm doing now.
So you feel like your time at UD adequately prepared you to go on?
Yes, it did.
To better things?
Because I've had a lot of other, but I've never had problems really finding work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's from my background.
Right, yeah.
From my background. You know, I believe that the main thing that college prepares you for life, I don't, how old are you?
26.
Okay, maybe you've already started setting this. It's like one hurdle after another.
Yeah.
They throw problems at you. So life constantly throws problems. And it throws problems. It's like a fighter. The worst punch for a fighter is a punch you don't see. And life hits you with punches you don't see coming. That, you know, you don't get a chance to bar and weed. You don't see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Dubuque College, it prepares you for problem solving.
In life, yeah.
In life. Right. So you're more equipped. Right.
Mm-hmm.
For life.
Yeah.
Right. Because you've had them extra years. Because basically, that's what school does. Right. Kindergarten, you get some things to deal with. Then they take it up a level, and it keeps going up a level. But it's more things for you to solve, and more things for you to solve. And then, unfortunately, a lot of folks, it ends at high school. But then college gives you, you know, takes you to another level.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They make you think a little more.
Yeah.
Than other places.
While doing everything else.
While doing other thing else. Right? So hopefully, by the time you leave college, then you're ready. You're about as ready as you're going to get. Because there's still some things, but you are, you know
hopefully,
what I'm saying?
Hopefully.
You're about as ready as they can get you, you know. But you're on a better course for when life starts throwing those things at you.
Yeah.
You know. Because mainly the only thing the best teacher about life is life. You know, but you've had more practice at it. And I think that's what college did.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Did you have a favorite instructor when you were there?
His name was Russell Nash.
Russell Nash.
He used to teach sociology. Right. Russ was so smart, so intelligent. Nobody really understood Russ. Right. So Russ was forced to give his test right out the book. Everybody, Russ's class would fill up like this.
Really?
Right. And you'd go to class, and people who didn't know, they would be sitting there. And then you realize that, I don't understand nothing this guy's saying. You look around, why ain't nobody taking notes? Then you see, I'm not the only one that don't understand this guy. But dude, he was just so, and he was a fun guy. He was a really fun guy, right? There used to be a commercial. I think it was a 7-Up commercial. The Nutty Professor. And this guy was just spewing stuff. Right? Right. Hair wild and stuff.
Yeah.
That was Russ. And Russ was like 5'5" or something like that. But he was a fun guy. He was a fun guy. I remember actually going talking to him a couple of times. At least trying to. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was just, you know, and Russ would be talking and talking and talking. And he'd go, Muscle Man, was that true or false? You know, and the best thing you would do is like, act like you knew, oh, that was false, Russ. I don't even know what you're talking about. I would have to say, outside of Coach Davidson, because I spent so much time with him.
Yeah.
Right. I would say, it's not fair. He's got an unfair advantage. Mm-hmm. That's why I didn't name him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's got an unfair advantage over everybody else.
Yep.
As far as I was concerned. But now, if you just said, you know, just, you know, regardless of the unfair advantage, who was your favorite? Coach Davidson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Coach. I'm responsible for some of the gray hairs. I'll take credit for a couple of them. My father died when I was 10, right? My mother's children are spread out. My oldest brother is 15 years older than me.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is 10 years older than me. The one closest to me is 4 years older than me. Now, you don't play with your little brother who's 10 years younger than you, or
right.
15 years, or even 4 years younger. And then Pop's dad. So I was a little, you know, by the time Coach got me, I was wild. But Mom did the best she did. I think Mom did the best she could. You know,
mm-hmm.
she took advantage of my love for basketball. Right. And I remember her telling me that, you know, they're not going to have to kick you off if you don't go to class. you know, I'm going to kick you off.
Yeah.
Right? And I was hooked. I was hooked. So, right? But still, there was still that wow by no male figure. You know, my mother remarried, but stepfather ain't quite.
Yeah, not the same.
Nah. No, you don't, you know. And unfortunately, it's like that. And after I got an adult, you know, I apologized and everything for the hard times I gave him. But he was trying. But my stepfather wasn't an athlete. He hadn't been to college. And then as far as my brothers were, they were all... There's two kind of athletes. One athlete has God gave him some talent. He just likes to play.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's another athlete who God gave some talent. He has the love. It's almost like being married or just going with somebody.
Yeah.
You know, when I don't feel like it, I ain't going to come see you. But if I'm, when you're married, you know, you get married, you just got to go to another room.
Yeah.
You see, I was like, I had the love for basketball. Right. And moms took advantage of that. Right, I had to play.
Exactly. You didn't do what it took.
I had to play. So if I got to go to class, I got to go to class. Right. But still, there was still that wild side that, you know, because there was no male, you know, a lot of stuff I learned was trial and error. So when Davidson got me, you know, it was like a dual personality sort of thing, you know. He's a good student, can hoop, but yeah, he's a little wild. he's a little wild. And coach would try to talk to me, and you know, and I always appreciated that. He called me, was it last year, just out of the blue.
Really?
Right? I'm like, coach? Right? So we get to talking. In my senior year, I don't know what happened. They ran out of money at the university, mm-hmm. or what. But we went on a road trip in a van. Right?
The team.
Okay, now there's 10 players, a manager, coach, and assistant coach. And we're in this van. We played right outside Kentucky. We played in Cincinnati. We played in Southern Indiana. In this van, right? Now, I had forgotten all about that. And I'm on the phone talking to Coach. He said, Vernon, you remember that trip down south? I'm like, how do you remember that? All the trips you didn't been on back then? I think he probably never did that again.
Yeah. Yep.
But, yeah, I talked to Dave, and I laughed about that.
You're probably going to make sure that funding's there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm guessing he, although there was one other time we, does the school still have a plane?
Yeah, they have the flying program and all that
they
stuff.
They still got that little bitty plane?
I imagine.
You ever seen it?
I've never seen it.
Okay. We played up in Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
And we took the plane. Plane's so small, we can only take like 9 players, one manager. Now, I'm only like 5'9", 5'10". I couldn't stand up, and I could touch both sides. You flew before, haven't you?
Yeah.
You know when the record plane hit the air pockets, drop a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that little thing used to drop where you could almost read street signs. We got to Nebraska. I'm like, Coach, you know, I'll catch the bus back. You know, but he wasn't going for it. But I was serious. You know, I'll find my way back.
Like, I don't want to die today.
You know. And of course, we lost because there wasn't nobody. No, you know, I don't feel like playing no basketball. Are you kidding me? I think I saw the light a couple of times, right? But that was worse than the van, actually.
Wow.
And actually, let me see. How many times did we do that? I think that was the only time we took it. Thank God. Thank God.
Did you guys have any kind of, like, traveling around to different schools and things like that? You guys never had any issues like traveling to different towns?
No. Mm-mm.
Well,
actually, I experienced probably more what you're talking about here in playing in high school.
Really?
Oh yeah, they see, going to these different high schools, they could get quite rowdy. And these were all black people. So actually, there was a couple of times when people were getting mad because you were owning their gym, right? Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And they would say some, they would holler out some stuff. But see, after my experience here in Chicago, where getting escorted out of places by the police, you know, that was a joke. I'm like, that's all you got? Really? That's it? Yeah. There was a couple of times in high school when we literally. You ever heard this movie? About this movie, Cooley High?
I've heard about it.
Right. Well, Cooley, they tore it down now, I think. But we were playing. Cooley was in our district, right? We were playing Cooley. And I went to Marshall, which is a basketball tradition here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Way back. We're playing in Cooley, right? And they finally got a... There used to be like a red division, blue division. Blue division is the... Not that good.
Yeah.
They finally got it after years and years and years. They finally get a team and they get out the blue division. They move up to the red.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They get a guy, he's like the leading scorer in the city. They're not that good as a team though. Right.
Just got this guy.
We roll up in Cooley and just tow it up. And not only that, you know. Schools have these cheers that they do, you know, you sort of talking trash in their school, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Frosoff won, Varsity wins. In the public league, there's no freshman, sophomore, junior team. It's just Frosoff. Freshman, sophomore, then juniors and seniors.
Right.
Varsity and sophomore. Mm-hmm. We win hand, going away. Right, 20-something points. We're getting ready, and the police come and say, you know, y'all need to hurry up and get dressed. We got to get y'all got to get us out of here. We got to get y'all out of here. Cooley was built, the gym is like on the fourth floor, so there's three floors. So third floor, we don't see anybody. Second floor, we don't see anybody. First floor, we don't see anybody. Right. Down at the doorway, none of the students has gone home. Oh, yeah, you heard of Cabrini Green?
Yep.
Cooley is right in the middle of Cabrini Green. All these students live in Cabrini Green, right? None of them went home. They were all waiting for us. Police make a path, right? Now, everybody's trembling because this is, you know, we got to walk right through them to get to the bus.
Yeah.
For some reason, they let us get to the bus. The police ran. Because I guess they knew all of a sudden bricks and bottles and everything, right? We're on the floor, the bus driver is doing this, trying to get us out of there, right? So when I got to Dubuque, you know, people talking harsh. Yeah, it wasn't no biggie to me at all. That's all you can do?
That's really? Crazy.
Really? And that's just, you know, that happened. As a matter of fact, I think this is still true. Playoff games are now played at neutral sites.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but This wasn't even a playoff game. Yeah, this wasn't even a playoff
game. Regular season?
Regular season. Right.
Wow.
Yeah. A case of Goliath winning and David not liking it at all.
Yeah.
At all. So when I got up there, now, there was a couple of times, and I think it was my last year when I was the only black person on varsity. Because there was some instances, you know, there was always some games, like during the Christmas holiday, when the freshman team didn't go, right? And I did hear the N-word a couple of times, so I knew who they was talking to.
Yeah.
But by then, you know, I wasn't worried about
brushed
it.
Off.
Yeah, nobody attacked me or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And by then, my skin was pretty thick. I could take you talking about me, mm-hmm. even saying that word.
Was the city of Dubuque segregated at all like that at that time?
It wasn't enough black people there to be segregated. You could walk around Dubuque for quite a while back then and not see anything but Caucasians.
And that'd just be a pretty typical thing, and people would just be like, oh, well.
Yeah, it was very few. John Deere brought some African Americans to that area. That's, I think that's what started it. Because most of, as a matter of fact, pretty much all the townies, excuse me, the African Americans that lived there, that's where they worked.
Oh, John Deere.
John Deere.
Did you have a job, like a job part time while you were going to school or anything?
On campus.
Yeah.
On campus. Freshman year, I worked in the student union in the pool room, and the last 3 years I was a gym supervisor.
Okay.
A lot of times my hours were during practice.
Oh.
I probably should have turned the tape off, right?
No, what are they gonna do now? Well, that works out pretty nice, though, right?
Yeah. But no, I never worked off campus any place. Oh wait, yes I did. I worked at the ski lodge.
Yeah.
Sundown?
Sundown Mountain.
I worked at Sundown 1 year. It was way too cold. So yeah, that didn't last long at all.
Stopped.
You know how the clothes they have now, the thermal stuff and all that. Well, they didn't have only the extreme rich had it. Because it was very expensive. To get that clothes. So you had to put on layers. You know, you'd have on so many clothes that you couldn't put your arms down, right? Because it was very cold up there in that mountain. That job didn't. I worked that, I went about 3 or 4 times. And I was like, oh no.
What'd they have you doing?
The ski lift. You ski?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do somebody have to sit there at the bottom now to just stop the chairs? Or you don't have to do that no more?
Sometimes, I guess, yeah.
Okay. Then, they would, somebody had to, you know, use people ski up, somebody had to just stop, you know, just stop the chair. Somebody had to sit down there and just stop the chair.
So people could get off?
So people can get on.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Could get on, you know, and the ski lift would take them back up. Mm-hmm. But they would line up and they would ski up because it didn't stop. So you just had to.
Right.
That's all you had to do.
Just,
but it was cold
out there all day.
We didn't do it an hour. It would be like three or four of us. Right. Three would sit up there at the hut.
Mm-hmm. And rotate.
And then one person would be down there for an hour. Right. And then he'll come up and then somebody would take his place. It was just too cold out there.
I was going to say, still an hour. That's still.
That's too. You're not doing anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little better if you're skiing. And you're moving around, but you're just standing there. Just it is way too cold. That was way too cold. So yeah, I gave that up.
Was that a pretty popular place then?
Yeah.
What else was there to do out? I guess out in the city of Dubuque. Like, what was the regular thing for you guys?
The regular thing was the Black Presidium,
right?
Because, you remember, students were really poor. Didn't have a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But Dubuque had a mall. They had shows, theaters.
Mm-hmm.
They had nightclubs. For a small city, I come to realize that Dubuque was really probably the best choice I could have made. But, you know, but coming from Chicago, it just...
There's nothing.
Coming from here. But yeah, they had, like I said, a mall, a theater, bowling. Actually, they even had a massage parlor. I never ventured there, but I heard things about it.
That's right.
You know, the happy ending and all that.
In Dubuque?
Yeah.
Wow.
But, like I say, I don't know if it's true.
Right.
I don't know if it's true.
Of course.
You know, people do exaggerate when that subject comes up a lot. Right.
Yeah, of course.
But, yeah, they had a massage parlor there. And then there was another place a lot of students worked. It was a packing house. Is there still a packing house there?
The packing plant? The meat packing plant. That closed down.
It did?
Yeah, it was off and on for a long time.
Okay.
And then it closed down. And then during a while there, when it finally closed, you know, they were talking about, like, this is going to be the end of Dubuque.
Really?
Of course, it never happened, but
yeah.
The city struggled for a long time when it
closed. I remember a lot of students working there.
Oh, there's a lot, actually, students mm-hmm. that worked at
mm-hmm. Part-time.
Wow.
Yeah. The stories they came back with were
And they're actually working, like, yeah, with the blades and stuff,
yeah,
like
cutting
that.
Cutting throats, yeah, and gutting and all that.
Wow.
I'm like, really? Yeah, you want a job? No, not that bad. I'm good.
That wouldn't be for you?
I'm not ready to give up meat yet. No, I'm good. I'm good. Yeah. But yeah, quite a few of the students work there part-time, as I remember.
Wow. Wow.
But yeah, most of the activity stayed on campus. It was hanging out at the Saul Butler. What was the rest of that title? Up to me tomorrow sometime.
As soon as I leave here. Yep.
As soon as I leave here, it'll come to me.
Were you involved in any other organizations or anything like that, like on campus, like fraternities or
no,
anything else? Just basketball?
Just basketball.
Never wanted to venture out to anything else?
No. Although there were a couple of African Americans in the fraternity that, like, I don't remember which was which. It could have been no more than two or three of them that were in the fraternities up there, but they were all white fraternities. Mm-hmm. One year, one of the young ladies that I was close to at Platteville, because they had black fraternities up there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we used to play Platteville, and she was a part of one of the sororities, and I asked her about it. She's like, "Baby, they don't like you up there. You don't want you. They don't like you. You might not want to go there." So it never went any further.
And that was it.
Yeah, that was it. Plus, the commute would have killed me anyway.
Oh, yeah. That's very true. So I know that during the time in the 70s that there was a lot of protests and things like that that went on. And I know, Kent State, that was probably in 74. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's something that happened during the time at UD when Kent State was going on?
I'm not remembering it. One of the things that I do remember is African History Month, February. We would always have, like, at the end of February, we'd have a big thing that would last like 3-4 days. We had Dick Gregory one year. And we would bring in a group. The university gave us a little budget to work with. And it would last for like 3 days. And it wasn't just parties.
Mm-hmm.
You know, speeches but nothing violent, you know.
But yeah, just kind of like a heritage kind of thing.
Yeah. And actually, I think it was every year I was there. Last week in February, as a matter of fact. African American Week or something.
And that was something that was pretty new?
It was up there, yeah. I think it started my freshman year, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know how long it lasted after I left. But as far as the violent protests, other than that one incident I was telling you about, no, none of that happened.
Oh, wow. So UD was kind of like its own little bubble in space away from a lot of the other chaos that was going on in the world.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's pretty much a lot of the questions that I have for you for today. Unless there's anything else that you...
No, I'm good.
You'd like to leave with.
I think I'm good.
Are you good? Okay. Well, I think...
I think any other stories we couldn't put on the tape.
Yeah, we'd probably stay away from that, though. All right. Well, I thank you very much for your time today, and I appreciate you taking the time to share
with me. It was nice meeting you. This was fun.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
God bless you, bro.
Thank you.